Information trade.
What kind of information?
There are rumors on the street that Ram is dead.
I don't deal in rumors.
Then what do you deal in? I think I could find something that you want.
Maybe.
Some of your guards overheard people talking at the casino. If it's true, then it could be that my sister Java is playing in some kind of takeover game.
Could be.
Well, it's only a rumor. What have you got?
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 41 of Conversational Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 41. The screenplay was done by Charles Hodges. It was directed by Costa Boats. And the episode synopsis read out by myself. Ram's disappearance has Ebony assessing her next move, while Pride's aggressive behaviour risks exposing his secret, and a captive Patch makes a stand. Sowing rumours of both Ram's death and Java preparing a coup, in order to find out what's really going on, Ebony meets with a new character to the viewers, Mega, a techno who has his own suspicions that there is no evidence of the secret project that Ram is supposedly working on. Mega and Ebony come to an agreement to trade information. So yeah, really out of nowhere, as usual, for new characters, but what did you make of Mega?
I liked it. He's intriguing.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to say this. I felt this way last week and this week. I know this is what, you know, Sabine was looking forward to, which I agree with you, Sabine. I love Mega too. But when I saw that this is his introduction, I was like, this is what she wanted to be here for real. Like, he literally just pops in to screen with no explanation who the frick he is, and they talk as though he's been around this whole time, and that Ebony already has a rapport with him, and it's lazy. It's so late, and it's so unearned, and it's like, mm-hmm. just a sentence explaining that this is the first time Ebony's gone up to him to talk to him, anything. But no, it treats you like the audience is so stupid that they won't notice that this new face popped up out of nowhere, who's supposed to have been around this whole time. And I hate his introduction, which is a shame because I really do like his character.
You're a Mega fan, Sabine. What did you think?
I like that there's a bit of mystery, but yeah, like Liz said, it's annoying that we've never seen him before, that we have no clue who this guy is. But on the other hand, that also kind of plays into the whole mystery with who is Mega and what on earth is he up to.
It's not that we haven't seen him before that I have a problem with. That's not the problem. It's the fact that the script does not address where this new person just popped in from. Yeah. Like I said, a simple sentence from Ebony, like in their conversation of like, yeah, I know we've never talked before, but I've heard blah, blah, blah about you. And I think you could help me, whatever, just something. But their conversation acts as it treats it as though they've been talking this whole time. They're familiar with each other. That's what I don't like about his introduction. Not that he's a new face, but that the audience is treated like we're so stupid that we're just accepted. Oh, okay, I guess everybody knows him, apparently. Like, no, they don't. Especially Ebony, of all people. I could have accepted if it was one of the technos. If it was like Ved or Java who'd gone in to talk to Mega and talk to him as if they'd always known him, I'd accept that. But Ebony, no, I don't accept it. This needs explanation.
Yeah, especially because Ebony's position within the techno hierarchy is so unformed. We don't know where she actually sits or whether they would take orders from her or anything like that. With Ram not in the picture, where does Ebony stand with the other technos?
And explain to me why she feels that he's someone she could go to help with her plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you summed it up perfectly when you said that it was lazy. This is lazy shorthand for we need to get to a place. And again, I mean, we spoke a bit about this on the last episode, but we talked about mm-hmm. how far away we were from the writing we previously used to get. And this really, again, is another nail in the coffin for that. When you think about how he could have been introduced to, or even us getting some conversations letting us know who Mega is. And like you say, him speaking to Ved or Java, and then him interacting with Ebony and seeing the difference between them and getting some backstory on who he is with Ebony being filled in would have made more sense and would have given the audience a cue of like, who is this person? It's not just random techno technician number four. He's named, you know, we went to his bedroom. It was so weird that that meeting took place in his bedroom. Did anyone else feel that as well?
The whole thing is just weird.
It would have made so much more sense if someone like Jay would have said to Ebony, okay, you want to find out stuff? Go find Mega. If Jay had said that, or Siva had hinted at that, it would have given the whole thing a lot more context.
And then, got filled in and given the audience a cue of, like, who is this character? What is his relationship with either Jay or Siva? Where does he fit in to the hierarchy of the technos? Why does Jay or Siva feel that Ebony could get information out of him? Why is he giving information to Ebony rather than Java? Like, we don't, like, why is he telling her this stuff?
Honestly, I kind of tilted between, is this laziness or is this just plain insulting, like, this introduction? Because, like, I mean, you have a character like, okay, Ginny, this background character has a whole background. She's introduced properly. You have the connections that are formed when she's meeting everyone else. But then this guy just pops out of nowhere. Like, he's supposedly been there for quite a long time. He's had a rapport with Ebony that we don't know about. It's like, well, like, are you insulting me? Or, I don't know. Is it laziness?
And he's obviously at a higher level than the random technos.
Right, exactly. That's clear. That is so clear from his introduction. But
and his outfit.
And see, that's an issue, because, like, if you just treated him as though he'd been a random techno who usually wore his mask, and, like, your suggestions that Ebony was pointed in the direction of him from someone like Siva or Jay, that would, you know, it's like, okay, fine. That would explain why we've never heard of him before, or why Ram has never mentioned this specific techno, because you can't introduce him as someone who's super high up and important to the regime when he's never been mentioned for more than 2/3 of the entire season. Mm-hmm. You know, the higher ups of the technos have already been established. Now, you could have saved that by saying he was from one of the other camps, one of their other, I don't know, wherever else they hail from, and he's been brought in for whatever reason or something. But you can't just have him there and give us no reason for why Ebony would choose him of all people to go to sabotage the regime, why he'd even be talking to her. And it's not even to preserve mystery. It's insulting, as Lance said. That's how I feel. I feel insulted by this introduction to who is otherwise a really great character. Okay.
Right. But, yeah, that's very clear. Yeah. He's a great character, but
his introduction, garbage.
Yeah. I'm not surprised that Ebony would know to go to him, because she's always been good at, you know, sussing out the people who are suspicious and most likely to be scamming as well. But I would have just liked to have had something more.
Especially when it'd be different if Ebony had actually spent this time married to Ram. Actually, if we'd seen her probing technos, having conversations with other technos, like if she was actually trying to accomplish something, then I would buy that through her, you know, working through the ranks and getting to know the technos and how they operate and stuff like that, that she discovered Mega through that. But she's done nothing the whole time she's been with Ram and within the techno camp, except, you know, exchange insults with her sister wife. And it's like, okay, so suddenly she knows who this is. The same woman who didn't know that the what she saw with Jay and Amber wasn't real, for Pete's sake. I'm sorry, you can't just give her brains all of a sudden and make me believe it.
Yeah. And are we meant to believe that Meg has been hanging around the whole time? We just haven't seen him. He's just always off camera, you know? Yeah. But I think that's the weakness, because when we were first introduced to the Technos, we were told, you know, they've done this in multiple cities and there are, you know, all this stuff going on and this and that. But as the story has progressed, the reach of the Technos has shrunk. The writers have gone out of their way to say, oh no, like this is the first time they've ever done it and all the Technos are in this one building. So I think if they kept the original premise, which is this is an empire that we've never heard of, and the reason why is because they're not from the city, they're from somewhere completely different, they're taking over territory because they've got technical advancements that nobody else has got around. And Mega has been shipped in from one of the other areas because Ram is unwell. You could have done that in dialogue.
Yep.
Really easily. But it's because the writers have decided, no, we're going to make the Technos much smaller. Jay's going to also come from the city. It's that shrinking of this empire that also doesn't work, in my opinion.
Yeah, because Mega could have been brought in simply because that's the phase they're in. And this was already pre-orchestrated from the start, that he would come in phase 3, 4, whatever phase they're in, whatever. Yeah. But like or maybe he came in because he's lost communication with Ram. Ram usually communicated with him and it stopped, which Java wasn't privy to. And so here comes Mega and she's got to scramble. You know, there's just so many things you could have done to still keep the mystery of Mega. Expand, you know, the lore of the Technos and explain why he's here. And even that might be a reason Ebony went to him, because he's the new guy. He doesn't know her, and it's somebody she could try playing with. Like, oh, okay, let me see if I get my foot in with this new guy, you know, who's just shown up for, you know, something like that, you know?
Even him coming in after the issue with the medication would have made sense.
Came
in because of that.
Yeah, he's like in the department, like he's head of, I don't know, surplus or like just their
biochem,
keeping track of their stuff. And obviously a truckload of, you know, of medication going missing that's been called into the city, he would take that seriously. He wants to investigate it himself because he's the one who said, you know, just anything to explain why the frick this guy is here.
Because that would have, you know, obviously worked, because he hadn't heard from Ram, yet his shipment never arrived.
Yeah.
In season 5, they still play with the idea that Mega is in the process of trying to manufacture drugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So him being in charge of that would have made sense.
It also leans into something, cause and effect. So we've seen the rebels ambushing the medication that was on that van. The effect is that Mega gets brought in because, you know, he's concerned, where's the shipment gone? Cause and effect. And that's how you tell a story. Mm-hmm. It has a ripple. Something happens in the storytelling. There's a plan. We're going to bring this character in now because this other thing happened. And that makes logical sense. But that's not what we've got here, is it?
We can't have logic.
We can't have logic because we're writing this as we go. We're getting pages on the day. That's what this is. That's what this feels like. We're going to have to plug the Ved gap. So we're bringing this new character in now to do that.
And we see later that they didn't flesh out his character when he started.
They have no plan for
Because suddenly we need to suddenly we need to get a backstory.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. Age-wise.
You just said they had no plan for Mega. But obviously they brought him in because Ved was going. This is why, how can you be this lazy?
They're just plugging a hole. That's why he's introduced now, because Dan's finishing.
Right. You know why he's here. Yeah. So why aren't you putting any effort in? You know exactly how he's supposed to tie into plug in the Ved gaps. Ved's going, so like they know at this point. So like,
They know he's going. Yeah. They know he's going, but I don't think they truly thought about, okay, we're going to bring in someone new, but they never thought about what his backstory should be at this point in time. and how to bring them.
They should have known.
They wanted a body in the room, I think. They just wanted another techno in the room. Because in the final episode, when Tai-San comes back, there's a sort of moment between her and Mega. And you're meant to think, have they had a romantic thing while she's being reprogrammed by him? Is there more going on here than meets the eye? That's just dropped. Because that was just a story thread that they were going to pick up, probably if Michelle Aang signed back on for season 5. She didn't. They dropped it. That's the problem that we are facing, I think, with this writing. We're picking up threads. We're doing absolutely nothing with them. Like Sabine has said, we're giving no backstory to Mega. So that later when we do give him a backstory, as Sabine said, doesn't really make any sense in terms of the timeline, how old everybody is, how young he is in those flashbacks. That's the problem with this. We're not writing a coherent story. We're just writing. We're not really writing a story, are we? This is just a collection of events. We need another techno character. I've got this actor. He's going to come in. The name's Mega. Go.
Just constantly plugging gaps in the sinking ship and not pasting it over. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think that, Samson, you said it in a nutshell. They aren't trying to tell a story at all. Every episode is just stuff that happens. And you made that great point about cause and effect. There is no cause and effect, anymore. Like, things just happen. And that's it. There's no through line as to why the things happen the way they do. They don't affect people in any meaningful way. It's just stuff that happens. You know, here, we need you to say this for this episode. We're not going to think about if it makes sense that you're saying this. We're not going to think about your mental state and the journey you've been on and what you might say, what you wouldn't say, on and on. Nope. It just needs to be said. There's no story here. It's just stuff.
Yeah. And that's the saddest thing, because that was the fundamental component that brought, I think, all of us to the tribe, which was the story, the characterization.
But we're not attached to it anymore.
What's the point of following a character if they're different from every episode to the next?
Yeah.
Like, what's to care about? What's the point of following a plot that doesn't make any sense and just meanders all over the place? Like, what is there to care about other than pretty faces on the screen, which, you know, that can work, but it's not going to stay with you in any meaningful way. Mm. You just, you know, you make up a story in your head. You know, that honestly, that is why the tribe has lasted as long as it has, because the fans were so passionate that they made up stories in their head. Mm. They gave a story to it. They gave reasons and motivations and imagined, and it lived on through fan fiction, where it got way more meaning than the last two seasons deserved in any way.
Yeah. God, that's depressing.
Yep. Hey, kudos to the fans. We made something out of nothing. It the real thing was the friends we made along the way.
Speaking of characters different from one episode to the next, we have to touch on Jarva again. So, still not appearing entirely displeased with Ram's unresponsive state, Jarva forces Patch to find out which medicine will save his life. Later, though, she finds him playing games rather than doing research.
How's it going?
Nothing yet, but I'm going as fast as I can.
So how much of the library have you got through?
It's pretty slow. There's a lot of detail on those programs.
You've been playing a game?
Yeah, I took a break.
You've done nothing. You haven't opened a single file since I left you. Even for a coward, I thought you caved in too quickly. You were just going to sit there and pretend, weren't you? And hope that Ram suffered before you could come up with an answer.
But he announces that he won't help her, as the technos, of course, took his brothers. It's only when Jarva threatens Dee that Patch finally agrees to help. So ignoring how Jarva discovered that Patch has such a fondness for Dee, what did you make of his stand against the technos?
So I'm going to say that we've just spent probably about 15 minutes talking about how the writers aren't writing. But it feels like in this moment, they do remember. They remember about Patch's brother. And they remember that they've kind of been building this relationship with Dee. And I did like the fact that in his own way, Patch was really brave to stand up to Jarva and say, actually, no, you can do anything you want to me. But it was only when she threatened Dee that he said, no, I'll help. I like that. I thought it was good characterization. It was remembering how we first met him, why he joined this fight in the first place. So in that way, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I liked what was going on with Patch, even if it's just by chance that that's what was needed for this episode. So they remembered his story and his past and his motivations. It worked. And I just love that she came in and he's playing games and she puts it together like, you haven't even opened these files. He's like, well, no, I don't care. I thought, I was like, that was really baller. Like, of all the badass things they've tried to make, you know, specifically male characters do this season, honestly, Patch, this was the most badass thing I've seen anyone do this season. Yeah. Was just be like, he can die for all I care. I'm just going to play video games. I haven't had the chance to do this. I got some downtime. Let me catch up on Keyboard Commander. You know what I mean? Like, that is freaking awesome.
And also, it comes from a place of relative security as well, because Patch is in a sort of win-win situation. If he doesn't do anything, what are they going to do? She needs him to do it. So she can't kill him. She can't torture him to the point where he's useless. So he can kind of stare her down and say, do you know what? Do it. I dare you. Do it. Because he'll die if you do.
Especially when she's already admitted to him that she's so desperate, she's going to avert for help. Like, there's nobody in her entire regime who can actually help with this. You've just told him he has all the power. And it was nice to see a character smart enough to recognize, like, you know how sometimes you see in a movie where someone will have a gun to someone's head and they already are threatening that they're going to kill you, right? But then they'll be like, if you fight me, I'll kill you. And it's like, you've already said you're going to. So I have nothing to lose at this point. But so many characters don't recognize that. And I was like happy to see that Patch did recognize, like, she clearly needs me. Like, she's out of options. She had to grab me off the street, you know, all of their smarts, all of their intelligence, and they need me, a guy whose hobby is medicine, you know? And I was like, that is awesome. Go Patch.
Yeah.
And just imagine, out of all the people we've had in Mallrats, this is the guy who actually has the pulse to do something.
That's what I said, like, this whole season, all of these characters are just doing things that are supposed to be considered badass. And I'm like, this is the best moment I've seen of anyone showing genuine, true bravery, standing their ground and just saying, no, I'm not going to help you. Go ahead and kill me. Like, I don't like you. Why would I help you? You know, if I have to die for your leader to drop dead, that's fine with me. Go for it.
And it's actually something I could have seen Dal do.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually. Good point, Sabine. It does feel like a Dal thing.
Jack would have been too scared, but Dal would have. Unless somebody, you know, threatened Amber or something. Yeah,
but it's so, like you say, it is so badass.
Yeah, it was a good moment for Patch. Jarva looked silly. Then again, I always think that stupid laser stance looks silly. I don't know who looked at that and said, that looks really cool. Flick your wrist like this, and it looks really awesome. He was awesome, though. And I even like why he changes his mind. I don't know how Jarva knows about Dee, whatever. But, you know, it makes sense that that's where he was like, yo, just leave her out of it, you know? But the thing is, I will say that given Patch's personality, that he literally works in a hospital, he's trying to help people, she could have threatened any of his friends. And I think Patch would have said, don't hurt them, you know? So maybe she was taking a stab in the dark. Maybe she's seen he and Dee together more at the hot, you know? Then again, I still think, like, how do you know that she matters to him so much? But maybe she was just taking a shot in the dark of the people she's seen him around, maybe. But, you know, whatever. It's not a bad scene, mostly because Patch is awesome in it. Like, the best part is her walking in, asking, like, how much progress has you made? And you can just hear the video game sounds. And he's like, oh, yeah, not much. It's like, that's a beautiful, like, form of rebellion. I am for it. He is quiet quitting. I love it. He made more of a stand against the Technos in this moment than any other character.
That's so true.
This entire season. This is the strongest stand I've seen against the Technos.
Yeah. Look at this, Jay. This is what you need to be doing. Take the uniform off, man.
I mean, this is what the Marauds used to be like. You know, this was, you know, Bray standing up to Chosen and being like, you're going to have to burn me at the stake because I'm not giving up anything, even if it would save my tribe. No, I won't drop my principles and what matters to me. I refuse. You'll just have to kill me. You know?
Ah, principles. I miss that show.
I do too.
Feels like a different show, though.
It does. It really does.
Well, it's back when there were stakes, real stakes, and people who had strong standings on what they thought and what they believed. So even their petty arguments got on your nerves because that's just the way people actually are. And even when it's like they had to go along with things because that's what the plot, needed, it still felt like they were putting some effort into making it character motivated. This season, they have not made it character motivated. Why the characters are just going along with the regime, you know, and not accomplishing anything or really fighting these Technos. And so it was just refreshing. Of course, it's episode freaking 41 where we finally get someone truly standing up to the Technos. And it's only because they knew they weren't going to kill him, you know, and.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, it's not that hard to write a moment like this, you know? And so, go Patch.
Can we all now that we're on episode 41, officially say that this soft reboot that they did in season 4 with the Technos has basically failed?
Yep.
Yeah. Can't say we haven't given this a fair shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We absolutely have.
Yeah. I mean, they may have gained new viewers, but I think you have to remember there wasn't a lot. I mean, maybe there was more in America, Liz, than there was in the UK and in Europe. But I think there wasn't much that was competing with this. And so I think they sort of gained viewers. They would probably have gained those viewers anyway. And you talked about, you know, attractive young men and women, like they're all hot. You know, of course you're going to watch it. Your hormones are going crazy. It doesn't matter what they're saying or doing. You're enjoying it. But I think, I think we're all in agreement. This has failed. This season 4, complete failure. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Just to wrap that up. I know we spoke about it last episode, but this was quite weird. So you know how Java was quite happy that Ram was unresponsive. But then in the next scene, she is threatening Patch. Like, can anyone make any sense of it?
No.
Nope.
It's so odd.
They just wrote her.
I mean, I guess she needs to be seen as panicky, but.
Well, she was genuinely panicking, though, wasn't she? That wasn't pretend. She's panicking, and Ben's panicking.
I think the point Lance is making is that they're not being consistent whether she's
I get that.
Like, one shot, they show her. I think you might have mentioned it, either you wrote it somewhere, but it's like they had a story, they filmed it first with like, okay, Java doesn't actually care about Ram, and they filmed it that way, but then changed their minds to Java does care and filmed it that way and just mixed them together, the cuts, because it's just like, I don't know how she feels because, if you don't care, why are you threatening to kill Patch over this, you know? And if you do care, then why do we have a bunch of shots where you're faking it? Like, what is going on here?
But then I think, Liz, you have so expertly said this has been the problem with Java going forward. The whole time she's been on screen, her motivations have been so muddled between one writer and the next. They don't know who she is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Siva is pretty consistent from the little we actually get from her. But Java, all over the shop. No idea. From one scene to the next, completely different motivations. So that you never know what she's feeling. You never know what's real or what's fake. You never know how she feels about anybody apart from Ebony, who she hates. That's her one consistent personality trait. And hate Ebony. That's it.
And at this point, I'm with her. I hate Ebony too. So.
Mm-hmm.
You would, Jane. We all do, girl. We all
I hate her too. She's just, ugh.
Her and Jay.
Yeah, there's so many pointless characters.
Yeah.
It started, I was like, okay, I'm rooting for you. Let's see what you're going to do here in the season. And you guys know I give credit where credit is due. And I've reached a point where I agree with Mouse. I hate all of you. Yep. I'm done. I'm done with everybody.
Well, out of the mouths of babes.
Yeah. Or, to give her correct name, the best character in season 4. Mouse.
Yeah, she is. If you want to
combination,
say
her and Patch.
Mouse is like the best character that came out of the reboot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, she's number one. There are some other good characters that came out of the reboot, but Mouse is number one.
Yeah.
Which is saying something, because I didn't like her when she first showed up. I was like, somebody torch this bratty little kid. throw her off the building. Okay? Gentle parenting isn't working here. But she's number one best character that came out of the reboot. She acts circles around everybody.
Yeah, she does.
And especially at that age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like anyone's being given anything great to act. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The script is barely serviceable, and she's still acting circles around everyone.
To be fair, she was actually motivated, whereas everyone who's been here since season 1 probably went, oh my goodness, what on earth are they doing to my character now?
Yeah,
I give up.
After a disturbance in the hospital ward between the Reds and the Blues, Sleen and Pride, after initially disagreeing on his use of force, ask Steve to train the new recruits to fight.
We want you to train up volunteers so that they can protect this place and themselves.
Me?
Well, you'd be perfect for the job. You got great martial arts skills, and you got a bit of free time on your hands. Is that a problem?
Well, could I have some time to think about it?
What's there to think about?
Well, it's just that I'm done with all that stuff now. I want to be a private person, just Lex and me. I've never had that before.
Well, maybe...
Are you serious?
Siva, however, hesitates, having wanted to leave her old life behind, which leads to Pride exploding at her. When she later complains to Lex, he confides in her about Pride's addiction to the game. Having seen the end result of this, Siva tells him he has to talk to Celine, only for Mouse to beat him to it after having seen Pride and May in the game. Celine promptly takes action, smashing the computer in front of a stunned Pride. So yeah, how did you react to Pride's secret coming out and Lex and Mouse's different approaches to coming clean?
I just want to say, one, you're never going to make me care about this red versus blue thing. I'm sorry, this is very stupid. And that's because I've seen real tribal warfare in this city. And also, again, it's not consistent as to how the game affects people. Again, Mouse and Sammy's lack of addiction to this game just makes everyone else look really, really stupid. For Mouse and Sammy, the game is fun. They play it for fun. They play with the fervor of young children, but there's no addiction there. And so when you have to compare that to Pride acting like a... Who doesn't he blow up at every freaking episode? There's literally a scene where Pride's blowing up at somebody. It's old news at this point, and I don't care if they're trying to blame the addiction for it. Mm-hmm. So you got him acting like a friggin' crackhead over this game. You got the Blues and Reds who are trying to kill each other in the streets and doing general mayhem and chasing each other all over the place over bandanas. But for some reason, Pride and May aren't trying to kill each other. They are opposite colors in the game. Mm-hmm. And they've got a real playful rivalry about it that does not come into their real life. This is so inconsistent across the board. I hate this blue and red thing. It's so dumb. And please explain to me why. This entire season, we've been waiting for Lex to have a conflict, an emotional conflict over anything. But the conflict they gave him is whether he should betray the non-existent friendship between he and Pride by telling Celine what Pride's doing. That's the conflict Lex has this season. Like, I don't know if I should tell her it's not really my place to do that. Like, what? This is the moment we're going to have a serious conversation about Lex trying to figure out what the right thing is to do over Pride. Somebody doesn't. Are you freaking serious? This is the big Lex conflict. I just don't know if I should portray him like that. You know, it's not a guy's place to get involved in another couple's relationship. Oh my god!
When isn't it Lex's place?
Oh, that was... Oh my... I hate this whole thing. The ridiculous of Mouse seeing them in the game, them blinking her out, and May is already at her door threatening her life. If you tell anybody, you know, where were you playing, May? How many places in the mall do you even have to play the game? Considering how Celine feels about it, everybody's got a secret console somewhere in the mall. Right at the moment, there's literally three consoles going on at the same time where people are secretly playing the game under Celine's nose and nobody can see them. They're playing like right out in the open, and especially Pride was literally right out in the open. Mouse is at least in her room. I assume that May is in a corner somewhere. Pride's at the community computer. Everything about this is stupid.
The only thing I liked about this scene, truly, is Celine's reaction in smashing the computer. Because I get it.
She should have smashed it over his head, though. Let's be real. You know, yeah, not that I condone violence or murder.
Those things are bloody heavy to lift.
Well, so, yeah, but she had the rage upon her, you know. If I was with Pride, I'd have rage all the time. I'd be like one of those women that lift cars when their kid's trapped under it, you know?
It just makes me so, the whole thing makes me angry. The way Pride talks to Siva, the fact that the only thing they give to Siva to make her look domestic is she cooks meals and she does laundry. These people don't change their clothes, but she has so much freaking laundry all the time. This is the only way they know to show that this is what Siva, this is her new identity. She's a homemaker and she's really leaning into it. She's literally washing the curtain. Like, she's washing the curtains in this place. That's all she's doing all day long. And the audacity for them to go to her and be like, talk to her. Even Celine's reaction to Pride speaking to her that way wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out great in the chat wasn't Pride a fighter?
Yep.
Like, wasn't that a huge plot point back in season 3 that Lex challenged him to a fight just so they could try to get the Gaians to help them in the fight with the Chosen? And Pride, like, he destroyed Lex.
He destroyed Lex. and then to help him with the training of the rebels, you know?
Right. It's like, exactly. Like, that's what you did last season, Pride. You're so upset that these people can't defend themselves. What have you been doing all of season 4? You haven't lifted a finger to make anyone's life better, and you have the audacity to call Siva a parasite?
Yeah, there's only one parasite, and it's Pride.
Oh, yeah, good point. But also, that Pride is RIP. We've not seen him since before he got in that relationship with May, maybe a little bit before that in season 3. He has been MIA. He's gone. I don't know what happened to him, but he's no longer in the building. Now we've got this flesh suit that looks like Pride. He isn't. He's some sort of avatar. You can't convince me that there's not a pod in the basement where this Pride crawled out of, because this is body snatcher territory.
I remember, you know, in a role play once, someone came up with a stupid idea that there were clones. Yeah, and for years I hated it. That idea. But at some point in time, that has to be the reason.
Pride is the clone. That's it. End of. Right. Next question.
That's what I'm telling you. The cope is real, man. The fandom was like, no, we have to fix this.
Yep. And even if something like the Technos were cloning, that was the original project that Mega was on. If that makes more sense than what they're showing us, that's saying something.
I do love that Mouse, despite having her young life threatened, which would be very scary if you were 6 years old, still just ran off and told Celine. I was like, go Mouse! Again, that is a badass moment that is underrated. Because you have to remember, we're talking about a 6-year-old, okay, who is out there every day shoveling coal, so that she can earn her bits to play a game that she likes. Screw what anyone says. Mouse is fearless. Like, even she's a badass, okay? Because she's like, look, this is what I want to do. I'm going to work to make sure I can do it. I'm a good liar. I sneak around. Like, when they took her little credits, she still got some hidden. Like, she's like the smartest character we've had in years living in this mall, okay? And as even though she's been threatened, she's found a way to play the game in the mall without anyone finding out that she's doing the very thing she's been ordered not to do on her own. It's not like this is Sammy leading her. She's doing this stuff on her own. And then after being threatened, she ran off to tell Celine immediately. Like, Mouse is a badass.
and in that, she admits to Celine, yeah, I was still playing this.
Yeah.
You know, she could have even been scared of the retribution for that. But no, she's awesome.
I mean, I'm glad Celine's reaction was as strong as it was. But given how all of this has been written and the way Pride has been behaving, it feels like it came too late for her to even recognize that this is what's been happening. You know, and she kind of just looks dumb in retrospect. I mean, I'm not going to blame her because he's been lying to her face. It's not her fault that her boyfriend's a liar who can't be trusted. But it's just like, it was so obvious the way Pride has been behaving is not okay. And she's been giving it a pass. And I think I would have enjoyed more scenes where, like, again, if this had been an earlier season, there would be more character exploration of what Celine's going through emotionally and not knowing how to deal with Pride. You know, like, we would see scenes like that with Ryan, for example, just because it's a really good mirrored relationship where he had to deal with Celine and not know how. He didn't want to chase her away, but he was sure she was lying to him. He wasn't sure if he could trust her. He was anxious, trying to keep her any way he could. And there was discussions. He had discussions with other people expressing what he was going through. There's none of that with Celine, so it just makes Celine look dumb. And we could have used conversations she really has with other people discussing, like, what she's going through dealing with Pride and what suspicions she might have and what actions she's afraid to take to deal with it or how to confront him. But instead, every episode, he's flipping out on people. He's acting like a violent drunk and she brushes it under the rug. Like, I'm just worried about you. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't like you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it is like him. That's all he does is act like an abusive partner, you know? And so her finally catching him in the act and smashing the computer, well, great. I'm glad she did that. It's like, how are you surprised? Did you really have to catch him in the act? Now, this is the line. This is all his other behavior. You were able to just be like, oh, I can't believe he's acting that way. But, you know, it just feels like this was really poorly done, you know, because there's no character work.
Yeah.
Yep. Plus, Celine knows what addiction is like. She knows how strange it can make people behave. And it's not like she just met Pride this season.
I'm also going to say, how far was she going to let it run before she eventually said, stop it, to him? Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you...
Yeah.
Like, what? You had to catch him in the act for you to finally... Yeah. That's the line in the sand, you know?
No, someone else has to catch him.
And speaking of addiction...
Someone seriously had to come to her.
I think it's odd that it was Siva who had to point out how bad addiction can be and how low it can bring you to Lex, of all people, who's literally been down this road himself back in season 2. He should recognize it better than anybody, the road that Pride is on. If he's going to be conflicted about, you know, telling Celine what's going on, he really doesn't need it pointed out to him by Siva that the road Pride's on is a bad one and it's going to end badly for everyone if there isn't someone intervening. You know,
I could have accepted Lex wanting to help Pride on his own, remembering, you know, how Alice tried to help him. But yeah, this is just, it's not the way, Lex. And as for Siva pointing it out that, you know, yes, it's addiction, this and that. The only value I saw in that is that it gives some perspective between regular kids playing the game and something they did with experiments, and he thinks they did the same thing to Pride, which makes it slightly different than just playing the game.
And we also know that they've done that to May as well.
Yeah.
So again, that kind of, yeah, that makes sense.
And you know,
whereas,
what? I could...
Yeah. They've tried to do that on so many people.
I could handle Lex not wanting to get involved if he gave a better reason. Other than it's just, you know, you don't get into other people's relationships, which is total garbage because you've done that before. I think it could have been an introspective moment where he shares something about his own experience. For example, like no one can help Pride. And I know that from my own personal experience. He has to want to get better on his own. I know because I've been there. Mm-hmm. I had to want to get better on my own. People tried to help me before I was ready and I still crashed and burned and I let them down. I had, you know, like just something that pulls from who Lex is and where he's been to make me believe why he's not eager to go to Celine and get himself involved in what Pride's going through, you know, but nothing. It's just words coming out of people's mouths and it doesn't matter.
Mm. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it also feels like they've remembered that Steve is a character. She had this relationship with the Technos and they need to give her a word bump up because she wasn't doing anything in the previous episode or the one before that. So let's do something with her this time.
Yeah, not something useful, but
she ain't got nothing else going on, is she?
Laundry.
A lot of laundry. She's washing every scrap of fabric she can find in that mall.
Ved recognizes that the orders supposedly coming from Ram are incompatible with what his fellow Technos are reporting on the ground and demands to see him. Java refuses, but Leia confides in him about the real situation. Fearing that he won't find Chloe if Ram dies, he helps her to fake Ram's CNET broadcast. Watching on, Ebony and Jay wonder if it's genuine and whether now is the time to strike.
So yeah, I'm just going to say, sorry, I didn't even let you finish that. Jay has the energy. If you know those mums and grands on Facebook that see AI generated content and think it's real, that's Jay. He really did look at that and think, well, it's probably real. That was the jankiest thing I've ever seen, right? That clearly was not real, right? And he already knows that they can make all this not real stuff. And
he
that was the
knows.
Least not real thing
they've
both ever made.
They've seen it. Intelligence in this room is...
Oh, no, come on. Give her her dues. Ebony did not believe what she was seeing. But Jay was like, yeah, that could be real.
Yeah, but, like, Ebony saw them do this earlier, you know, when they made the whole thing with Amber. It's like, with the broadcast, I mean.
But Jay was also made aware that the Amber thing was fake. He suspected it when he saw it. He thought it was weird. And then he got the real disc with her actual message. So he also knows for a fact. He may not have watched Ram do it, but he knows for a fact that it was done. And so, as Lance said, this janky recording has him doubting whether it's real. Like, this has him going, well, I mean, it could be real. Like, are you... Get out! Straight into the garbage with you!
It's a thing of wonder. How has he survived this long? You know, it comes to be you've been right the entire time. He was just there for his looks. That's the only reason that Jay was employed. That's it. You're correct. That's it. He brought nothing else to the table. It was just something for Ram to look at and slap the arse of every now and then. Right? That's it.
Yep.
And we're also missing a step with, like, you can't have Java jump from absolutely not telling anybody what's going on with Ram, okay? And that's actually a very good scene between she, Ved, and Ebony, where she is trying to keep all of the plates spinning in the air and deflect everyone, but keeps them away from Ram, you know, and, you know, even, like, saying, Ebony, if you have problems, go talk to him. And she's like, I would if I could find him. You know, implying that Java literally has him hidden away somewhere in the hotel where no one can find him. Okay, whatever. Ebony, this is your hotel. You're telling me you can't find the room she's gotten him hidden in? Give me a freaking break. Anyway, I need to see the scene that makes Java realizes that she has to talk to Ved, that she has to confide in somebody. You can't jump from her refusing to tell anyone to her and Ved in the room together and imply they've had the conversation, because you didn't show me when Java changed her mind and realized she needed to tell Ved. I don't need to see her telling Ved, but I need to see that breakdown in her emotional state of realizing that she has to and that he's her best bet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I need to see that moment.
Even if it's just the, okay, I can't do the technical part of doing that broadcast without him, so I guess I'll need Ved.
Yeah, something.
Because at least Ved has something to lose if Ram passes away.
Yeah, you give me that, and then I don't need to see the conversation between her and Ved, where she finally comes clean and says, I need you. You have to see something, you know, or whatever. But you can't just jump. And I'm supposed to accept at some point she realized she needed Ved. She talked to him. He was totally on board. You know, I need to see how she got to that place. And I also don't like the way this ends, is because, like, they make it seem, it's all so badly done. It's all so badly done. And they're speed running dumb. The only thing I kind of like is, you know, Ved realizing, like, if Ram dies, I can't find Chloe. And he says it out loud to himself. You see how easy it is to get a character to express their motivations? Like, because he says this, we realize, yeah, this is why Ved's helping someone he doesn't like. We know why he's still with the Technos. We know he's still upset with Ram, but he's laser focused on Ram because Ram is his only key to get into Chloe. He hasn't forgotten about Chloe. We know what his overall mission is. I've got to find her. Ram is my only way to do that. Even if you have him talk to himself for a brief moment of like, you can't freaking die because you're the only one who knows where Chloe is and I've got to find Chloe. And he even repeats her name to himself like a mantra. That's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm doing this. It's not that hard to give your characters realistic motivations so the audience knows what's moving them.
It actually made me like Ved more.
Right, yeah.
It's crazy that Ved, who has known Chloe for what? It's 3-4 weeks at this point, and their relationship wasn't that great, but he is still laser focused on finding her, and Lex gave up on his wife within 2 freaking days. The love of his life. Where half of their relationship, she was in captivity. They got over her having a second husband, for Pete's sake. They've been through it. All right? And he gave up on her within 2 days. I don't feel her anymore. She's not here. Hey, Chloe, you got nice hands. You know what I mean? Like, he moved on. You're telling me that Ved is more like, I gotta get my girl.
He's the better guy.
I don't care if our relationship was total toxic garbage fire. I need to get her back. I'm not even sure if she liked me half the time. I have to get her back. Like, you're telling me that Ved is better at this than Lex?
Ved's the better person.
Better than Lex, better than Celine. Like, wow.
And that's why he's not a mole rat, I guess.
I can't get over it. I cannot get over that Ved is more interested in getting back somebody than our entire mole rat clan were in getting their friends back.
Yeah, but mole rats are notoriously selfish.
He barely knows her, you guys!
But he changed him for good.
Oh my gosh.
It's sad. It's sad.
So sad! Yeah. So, I guess, so we got MVPs. We got basically Ved, Mouse, and Patch. MVPs of the episode. They're the only, like, decent things in this whole episode. Is these three characters.
Why, that's depressing again.
Yeah, but this whole series is depressing.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
I think Ebony and Jay's conversation could have been better. Instead of having Jay say something stupid like, well, what if it's real? He could point out that the city has been fooled before, you know? And like, how are we going to convince them that it wasn't real? Like, this could have been an actual conversation about what they're dealing with here. You got a whole city that's delusional on the game, fighting each other in the streets over their video game characters. How do we convince them that that wasn't Ram when they've been fooled before, you know, like something. But instead, no. Ebony's like, that, oh, that wasn't real. And he's like, but maybe it was. I hate it here.
He's an idiot. He's an idiot.
Yeah, he really is.
He's just there for his looks.
Yeah, he really is. He really is. Yeah, that's it. That's all he's there for.
And he didn't start off as an idiot. That's the thing. It's not like Jay started off badly. He started off as a strong character.
So did Hyde. What happened there?
I'm just realizing the fact that the Technos aren't doing anything with the whole meds being missing. They blame that on Jay not being there because that was Jay's department.
I didn't buy what they tried to say that that stuff was Jay's department. I was just like, no, we've seen Jay work, okay? And we know that he barely did anything. I don't buy that someone's been covering for Jay. Like, Jay's he had to pay someone else to do his homework.
Yeah, maybe his little brother.
That's probably why Ved wasn't concerned. He's like, well, Jay's not here, okay? I did his work anyway.
That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So Java panics when Ram briefly opens his eyes and wants to give him medicine before Patch has finished his research. But Ved suggests a different plan, hooking both him and Ram up to reality space in an attempt to communicate. So yeah, what do you make about Java and Ved's respective plans?
I thought this was weak sauce. Because they stage it like this is... Like, Ved choosing to do this is, oh my gosh, you're going to go in there and see if you can talk to his virtual self to find out what he needs? Oh, but they make it, the tone is almost like that Ved's putting himself in danger, but not once have we been given a reason to believe that that would be dangerous for him to do. This isn't the Matrix where he's going to have to go in there and fight off all of, like, Ram's demons to get to him. This isn't the movie Cell. Like, it's such a simple thing. Ved's always in virtual reality. So I don't like the tone, acting like we should be concerned about what Ved's about to do.
Yeah, because they make it seem like if something happens to Ram while Ved is in there, if Ram dies, Ved dies.
Yeah, that's its ominous tone. And it's like, what's ominous about this? You haven't given us a reason to think... Like, maybe if you'd added that to the conversation, you could have added something like, well, the instability of his mental state or whatever's going on, it could be dangerous for you, blah, blah, blah. But they don't. He just says, I'm going to have to go in there and talk to him. And then it dun, dun, dun. And it's like, why, though? What's the big deal? Yeah, I don't know why you didn't think of that sooner. You know? It'd be great if it ended with Java going, oh, my gosh, that's a really great idea. Just acknowledge, like, wow, I'm so glad I told you finally, because I've been pulling my hair out, not sure what to... Right, I didn't think of that. Instead, it's like, it ends as though we're supposed to be concerned for what will happen to Ved if he does this. And it's like, why should we be concerned? We have no reason to believe this would be dangerous for him.
Well, I don't think there's anything else to add to that. And this is a poor episode that ends with a cliffhanger that's not really a cliffhanger. It's just another thing that happens. Shrug.
Like, yeah, just get in there then. Jeez.
Yeah.
All I felt was like, oh, so you've been wasting our time with this whole medicine subplot when someone could have just put a helmet on to go talk to him all this whole time?
And like, maybe Java could have just gone and shot Patch in the head, you know?
It's like Java taught... didn't even think about it because Ram would never tell her anything anyways.
Yeah. Why is she still here? Like, why has she got a job? I mean...
Well, she runs everything. She's really good at admin. Yeah, like, she's running the whole show. She's always working and taking care of things. So she's really good at admin, you know, but it's...
She's the only one who's working.
Pretty much, you know, except for the NPCs running around the hotel. But it's just so frustrating to set up characters as being technologically advanced. All of them are educated in some way. And then to just make them dumber and dumber and dumber and dumber as the season goes on. Just so your storyline will work. What excuse of a storyline there actually is, you know? And so when Ved, you know, says, I'll just gonna go into virtuality and talk to him. It kind of is like, why didn't Java think of that? She's been in there before with Ram plenty of times. At least give me a reason why that didn't occur to her. Nope, she's just too dumb to have considered it. And yet we've been seeing how desperate she is to get this guy to wake up, and that never occurred to her. but I don't have a good reason for why. She's just too stupid to have thought of it now. And again,
she didn't want to think about it. She didn't want to mention it because, and again, conflicting storylines. Does she want him to survive? Does she not want him? I don't know.
Oh my word.
We don't know.
Incomprehensible. And if you want me to care about the way this ends, then you need to give me a reason why Fed could be putting himself in danger to go in there while, you know, Ram's in almost a vegetative state.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me something, you know, that, like, it could be dangerous because I'm nervous about it because, you know, like, you could have continued this conversation just a few sentences longer with Java being like, you can do that. So you confirm she didn't even know it was a possibility because Ram's not conscious. She could have said something like that. Like, I didn't even know you could do that because he's unconscious. And then Ved explaining why he knows he still could, but there's a catch. If I go in there while Ram's in this state, da 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 da, it could be risky for blah 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 reasons, wibbly wobbly time stuff. And then you end the episode with that sense of like, Ved's about to do something dangerous, there's some stakes here.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it's a nothing burger, and it's like, okay, fine, put the freaking helmet on, let's get this over with.
And that, your suggestion there, makes it 100% more interesting. Instantly, I'm glued, I want to see what happens next. When you also throw in the additional reason that he's doing it, which is because of Chloe, the only reason Ved is doing any of this is to keep Ram alive. So he's risking himself by going in, as you said, to keep Ram alive just so that he can find out where Chloe is.
Mm-hmm.
All of that, I'm engaged. I want to see what happens next. I'm interested. The stakes are high. They're high because I want to know now. Interesting. But it goes back to the intro of Mega. Like you say, all we needed was a couple of words put in the right place to just explain who he is, how Ebony might know him, what his position is in the technos, who put her on to going to speak to him. Again, we're deciding, we've got a number of words that we can use per episode, and we must not go over that. So we won't give you any sort of narrative detail. We're just going to throw this in at the end and end the episode. That's it. Leave. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
But yeah, the only positives in that, I like the idea that if it's so risky and Ved knows the risks, he's willing to do that for Chloe.
Yeah, as Tamsin said, you lock that in and suddenly it's like, okay, I want to know. I want to come back. I want to know, is Ved gonna succeed? You know, is he going to be able to get in there and come out of it and find out what happened to Chloe? But no, you've left me with, okay, who cares? I don't. Just go in then.
If someone was aware of the plan, they would be able to put this. It's low-hanging fruit. If you had a plan, you'd know that the story beats that Liz set up and Sabine set up. You know, these are the stakes. So, but because there's no plan, it's just, they miss these beats all the time because it's just getting from one scene to the next. There's no coherence. Like, what story are we even trying to tell this season? That's the other thing. Other seasons have had clear stories. The first one, survival, found family, the things you have to do to survive. The second one is, you know, basically the French Revolution, but with the mole rats. The third one is having to rebuild everything, rebuild your reputation, fight off the chosen. And just when you think you're safe, every comes back to bite you in the bum. This one, what was the plan? What is the story we're trying to tell here? There isn't one.
Season 4 is the new Coke. Sorry, it's sorry, that's very American. Sorry, but it was a big deal back when I was a kid. They changed the formula to Coca-Cola, and it was rebranded as the new Coke. Now, nobody really knows why they decided to rebrand Coke, but they were selling it really hard, and it didn't last very long. It was just commercials, new Coke, new Coke, and it fell flat. They finally just had to go back to regular Coke. And then the conspiracies were, did they even change the formula? Like, what was this about Coke? It was such a crazy thing that happened. And that's what season 4 feels like. It's just the new Coke. We were trying something new for no really good reason, you know, but it just fell flat on its face.
It's bizarre. The whole thing's bizarre. And it seems like this and episodes like this that really it's glaring, you know, how bad all of this is. Yeah.
But what, 10 episodes? 10 episodes? That's it, guys?
Yes!
The final 10.
It's the final countdown.
I'm making merch for all of you for Christmas saying I survived season 4.
We actually did. We survived.
I can't believe it. I mean, you guys have been in the... I mean, no, I started with episode 1, so I've been here too. Oh my God.
And it hasn't broken our friendship yet.
No, if anything, it strengthened it.
We've trauma bonded.
We have. Yeah. We've been in the trenches on this. You know. No one can ever say, because we can say, we survived season 4 of The Tribe. Get on with it. 52 episodes of slop that feels AI generated. Release us.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness.
That brings series 4, episode 41, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for thetribe.co.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for episode 42. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.